FTP daemon so that whatever functionality it is that's being attacked by vulnerability, either one, isn't available because we've turned it off, okay? Two, isn't accessible because we've taken whatever weird way that an attacker is going to pass input to the FTP daemon and actually just, you know, shut that off. And we'll talk about, you know, you'll see as we go through how much we're going to strip down the FTP daemon. And then the third thing is when you do get hit by it. Okay, when you do get hit by an attack successfully, we're going to try to contain the damage. So I'll talk about what we can do because, you know, if you've got a remote root attack, it would be really, really nice if at least it turned into a remote, you know, user FTP attack, or it turned into a remote user FTP attack and somebody's stuck in a little jail directory and can't do anything on your system. They can't pilfer your email or whatever it is that people are doing right now. Okay. So the first vulnerability I've actually got a live demonstration on, and that's part of why we've been doing all of this AV work is so that I can see the screen so I can do the demonstration. There was a vulnerability in FTPD. It was in a large number of distributions. It was in a real wide range of versions. We have any Immunix guys in the room? Anybody in the room running Immunix or work for Immunix? You work for them? No, run them. Okay. So Immunix is a great Linux solution that, you know, it's a great Linux distribution that lets you have kernel level control over this. They still get hit now and then, but it's pretty nice. They were on the vulnerable list. We'll have to see sometime exactly when attacker gets. Anyway, the way that this one worked, you know, we've all heard about buffer overflows, we've heard about format string bugs and all these different things we all had to read about and figure out, you know, what the heck is this? You know, some programmer did what wrong? This one was just a really odd, this is just an odd example of something, you know, of FTP's feature creep. Okay. How many of you are running Unix FTP servers right now? Responsible for them? Okay. Who wants to? Raise your hand if you're here because you're an aspiring FTP admin or something. Okay. Cool. Well, anyway, the deal with this was basically FTP's this horrible, horrible protocol that we all use because, you know, partly we're stuck with it and a large part of its inertia. And the big deal is that, you know, and when we talk about how it's a horrible, horrible protocol, part of it was designed by committee. It's clearly like a whole lot of people somehow got invited to the meeting where they designed this thing. So they added in all kinds of extra features. Who's familiar with the FTP bounce attack? This is an old thing. The guy who discovered that and publicized it is at this conference. I don't know if he's in the room. I'm going to say no. Anyway, the FTP bounce attack basically works like this. You're talking to an FTP server, and you're saying, you know, hey, I want this file. And it's like, yeah, sure, I'll send you the file. You're like, no, wait, don't send it to me. Send it to that other guy over there. And I don't know why somebody thought we'd need this feature, but, you know, people have been using it. People were using it for a very long time, and you can still use it now. There are a bunch of HP LaserJet printers that are all vulnerable to this because they all get their own little FTP server on. You know, so you can FTP up a file and it'll print it automatically for you. But you can also use a company's LaserJet and a number of other printers. You can also use their LaserJet printer against them to make your attack look like it's coming from their printers instead of from you. Anyway, this is FTP. It's just been a mess because there were a whole lot of people who got in and were able to get all of their little features in. And this one little feature is something actually a lot of us have probably used at some point or another. But the tar feature, you you say, you know, I want this, you know, I'm asking for files, but I want this whole freaking directory. I don't just want one file. I want the whole directory. So what I'll do is I'll just ask for the directory. What you do is you say get directory, you know, directory name dot tar, and it says, oh, you must mean you want me to like make one little compact turbo and send you that one turbo instead of sending you all the files one by one. Yeah, I can do that. There's a lot of other things it does along these lines. But one of the things is that if it's going to, you know, when it uses tar to create that tarball for you, tar will take whatever, tar happens to take, you know, whatever weird arguments you can squeeze in there. And as we'll see, one of the arguments you can squeeze in there is a shell script. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this on the slide, and then I'm going to do it by hand. Okay? The way this attack works is first, we have to create a program, and in my case, I created a shell script, but we have to create a program, we have to create a Trojan, a simple backdoor, okay? We have to create a program that can get run on the system and, you know, give us interactive root. And so what that little script is that's two lines long is just, it just runs netcat, it listens on a port, and it runs, you know, it runs a shell as the user that it is, which will be root. Which will be whatever user we're authenticated as. And it attaches that shell to port, in this case, 6666. Okay? So what we do is we're gonna put that script and netcat in a little tarball called b.tar. Just trust me, it's necessary. We've got to get them up there. The reason for the tarball is so that our script is marked executable, because site chmod doesn't work. Okay, well, we need it to be executable. So we're also creating a script, and this is where the vulnerability comes in. We're creating a script called blob that's going to get run. And what blob is going to do is it's going to untar that tarball, and out of that tarball is going to come netcat and our script, our backdoor. Okay, and it's going to then run the backdoor, and I'll show you how that works. Okay, the fun little feature we're using is. Tar's got an argument called use compress program. You can tell it to use gzip, or you can tell it to use bzip2, or you can tell it to use whatever. In our case, we're going to tell it, you know, for the compression to use a shell, and to, you know, just run that quick shell script for us. And the way it works, you can see the attack. The way it works. The way it works is we put up our little tarball, we put up the little script, and then we created and we're going to put up a little empty file called --- use compress program equals bash blah. Okay? And then we're going to go and ask for that. We're going to say get that weirdly constructed file. There should be a --- there. Dot tar. Okay? So we're asking it. Remember, whenever we append dot tar, we're saying, hey, can you just, you know, tar up that directory. So it's gonna tar it up for us. It's gonna run tar, which is gonna run our scripts. Okay, so now what I gotta do, how well can everyone read that text? Here you go. Do you want it white on black? I can switch it. That's the biggest I get. Yeah? Oh, yes. The presentation in your book has clearly had a few slides added to it. And so I'll put it up on my website. If you can read this text, the website is www.jjbsec.com. If you go on that website in the next couple days, I'll put up these updated slides. Actually, if I have wireless access when we get out of this room, I'll put them up immediately. Okay, so can I take that down, or it's JJBSEC. It's referenced on the conferences site. thing. So, assuming we've created each of the scripts that I showed you, we're just going to put them up on the... I've logged in as Jay on the target system, okay? You can ask me how I got a Jay account on the target system, and we can think about that. But let's just say that I ripped it off because I was at some hacker conference and someone was using FTP and I sniffed their password. That's how I got an account on the target. So if I type put blah, I put my script, I put b.tar, and then I'm gonna put minus minus use compress program equals bash blah. Okay, and now I'm gonna turn around and get that file. Okay, and this is where the FTP server just kind of sits and says, I'm still working on that. And it's going to still be working on that for some time because what it's working on is running our backdoor. So until the backdoor exists, it's not going to be done compressing the file we asked it to send to us. Any questions? Okay, so if we connect to that port, 3129. Okay, we don't see much. Type ID. It says I've got Jay's account. I can do stuff. I can look around. I can continue looking around the system and see what's here. Okay. So right now, what I've got is this exploit just gives you whatever user's account you've been able to pilfer. But the nice thing is, from here, what we do is privilege escalation. Okay. We say this is whenever we're talking about you've got a web server, somebody broke into your web server wasn't running as root, so you're not worried, right? Well, the thing is, if there's any other vulnerabilities on your system, they'll often go looking for those. Often, if they know what they're breaking into, if they know this is a Red Hat 6.1 box, they know there's a vulnerable program called User Helper. And maybe they'll FTP up, as we already have in advance, a little program called User Router, which takes advantage of User Helper. By the way, the guy who wrote User Router in the room? Okay. I'm going to give that guy props whenever I see him. And the program runs, and again, very nicely with these exploits. They still come with all kinds of pretty graphics, but we're root. Let's take a look at the shadow file on this. If anybody wants any passwords, we can just grab some and go crack them or something like that. It's fun, end of game. This was fun. This vulnerability existed for some time. What I'll do is I'll go back to my slides. Okay, this vulnerability was in WooFTP from version 2.4 to 2.6, 2.4 something to 2.6. Which, I don't know what date range that was, but that could have been like 5 years long. Okay, one of the problems from the defender standpoint, with there being vulnerabilities that we haven't heard about just yet, and more to the point, exploits that we haven't heard about just yet, is that for 5 years you're vulnerable until word finally leaks out that, there's a problem in WooFTP. And when we finally hear about it, we're like, oh God, I wonder if I got nailed any time in the last 5 years. So, for all of us my biggest argument for trying to harden things is, you can patch, and patching's all good and all, but you only get a patch once your vendor knows there's a problem. If your vendor doesn't know there's a problem until 5 years after the problem is first created, That might not be any fun for us, okay? Patching's not going to work. That's what we call a window of vulnerability of five years. The nice thing is, as I'm going to show you with these slides, basically, you can take some proactive measures and not get hit by stuff like this. So I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you a step that countermands this, but I'll show you steps that counterman just about every vulnerability that's been coming out. Okay, this is not black magic, actually. It's kind of just basic principles. A lot of this, I think, just about everything I'm showing you is stuff that people have been recommending at the Unix hardening courses for years. It's probably some of it's even the stuff that that comes in the documentation that says we didn't configure it this way, but you probably want to. So what I'll do is I'll talk to you a little bit about what we can do to avoid this stuff. Okay. Like I said, we got a remote shell with the exploit. The remote shell was J. Okay, and that slide is unreadable. But that has the demonstration of that's the same stuff we were just doing in the shell, I promise. Okay. Now, the exploit actually is a whole lot harder to pull off. I did this with user J because it's a whole lot harder to pull off with an anonymous login, and most of them are. And the biggest reason it's hard to pull off an anonymous login is you're trueted. Okay, when you log into an FTP server as anonymous, you're trueted. It means you're stuck in the directory. On Linux, it's home FTP. You can't get out. Well, mostly. Okay. You can't get out. It means you only have access to whatever files are there. If there aren't enough files there to actually do to actually exploit the program or to do whatever damage you wanted to do once you have exploited the program, then it's no joy, right? Okay. So you can do it. It's definitely tougher to pull off because of the cheroot. And so actually, one of the things I'm going to bring up today is how you can cheroot every user if you want to with this whole FTP thing. Okay, so the first thing is, how do we avoid this attack? Okay, you can avoid the attack if you turn off if you turn off the tarring feature, that nice little tarring feature we talked about. Okay, you can turn it off if you turn off the compression feature. Okay, so we're kind of turning off features now. The question is, do you use them? I don't know. Has anybody used that? Has anybody used the tarring feature in a while? No. It is a nice little feature. I used it to pull down big portions of Technotronic at a time. But no, it's not really one that most people even know about. That's the nice thing about a lot of the stuff you can turn off in these FTP daemons is that, most people don't even know about all the features they fought so hard to get in, then end up giving us all these vulnerabilities. So we can just, we can just shut them down, and we don't really have too many problems with that. Okay? We can also do some other stuff. One of them is if you've got anonymous users uploading files, you can make sure that said anonymous users can't actually pull those files back down. This is one of those things I recommend just so your site doesn't get used to trade by who knows who, trade wares and DivX movies and porn and whatever else is of interest. The last thing we'll do is we're actually going to set, one of the reasons this attack worked was that I got to upload a file called --- use compress program equals bash blah. It's kind of a weird file. You don't see that one every day. So one of the things we can also do is put on a filter. We tell the FTP server not to bother with files that have really weird names, and we'll quantify weird, but that really is dim. It's dim in the book as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this slide is in the book, but it's very dim. Can we hit the page 70? Page what? 784 in the book. Can we dim the lights in here? I can also try to. I can also try to put this in black and white. better?
Mostly.
Okay. If you guys really can't read it, I can try to start bolding slides.
Speak.
Okay. Basically, let's go for now, and if you really can't see, we'll start trying to bold out. We'll start trying to bold the slides. I'm just showing you, this is a basic FTP access file. This is the file we get to configure to turn stuff off. This is where all the access control is done, but really it's basically the main configuration file for Woo FTP. It's got a bunch of stuff that we'll be modifying as we go through. I just want to show you the structure so you can see what it looks like.
We'll try and highlight it with the mouse.
I'm sorry, I just lost my slideshow. Well, that's a thought. I'm going to go with what we've got. I'll try to highlight it with the mouse, see if that gets us anywhere. Actually, no, it just brought us to the next slide. Okay, let's try to go like this. Let's try to go with what we've got. If this is truly useless, somebody, you know, raise your hand and tell me, and we'll try to, and I'll play around with PowerPoint and try to make this work. Okay, so the first thing is there's a section of the configuration file, and if these lines don't exist, you can just add them. That basically turns off a bunch of different things that people can do from the FTP client. One is ask for compression. One is ask for tarballs. Okay, another is change the file permission bits. Okay, one of the biggest reasons we want to leave Chmod off is that people can't upload something and then set it executable. Part of the reason that last exploit had a tarball involved in it was I didn't have any other way to upload an executable script. Because if I upload a script, it's not going to come up executable. Okay, so I have to upload a tarball and get the FTP server to untar it and give me that execute bit. So turn off. We're going to make sure Chmod is off. We'll make sure people can't delete files, overwrite them, or rename them. Okay, that all of that's important because a lot of the different exploits that have existed over time have used the ability to make weird files or to delete files or place them with your own, depending on permissions in the directory. We'll talk about one of the exploits where that would be really useful. Okay. We'll also talk about anonymous upload. Okay, in this case it worked because I had already stolen this guy Jay's account because he was using FTP. He was using clear text at a hacker conference. I mean that's pretty dumb. Okay, if we don't happen to have a way to steal a user's password, we'd have to use anonymous to pull this off. Okay, how many people? There weren't too many people in the room running FTP servers, but those of you who were, how many are letting people upload files anonymously, like just connect and put whatever you want on? Nobody. Okay, there are people still doing this. The biggest reasons they do are you've got a group of scientists who are all trying to share data or whatever, and they're FTPing it up to a site. Okay, there are a good number of uses for this. I wish there weren't, what we can do in terms of what we can do is try to lessen the risk from anonymous upload. Because if we could turn off anonymous upload, and the nice thing is that out of the box, Red Hat's got it turned off by default nowadays. But if we can turn it off, then we don't have to deal with a lot of the attacks that all seem to require upload capability. That last attack was really fun. I was having fun. And you can't pull it off if you can't upload a file. Can't pull it off if you can't upload a weird file, but you can't pull it off if you can't upload a file at all. So what we do is we set up an anonymous upload area, and the idea if you are doing anonymous upload, we're going to set it up so you can put files up, but you can't actually pull them back down. And the reason for that is just that it stops exploits and it stops you from getting used as a distribution site by God knows who. Okay. The idea then is that if you're FTPing stuff up and you want it to get pulled down by other people, it goes in this incoming directory, and at some point a sysadmin or somebody's going to have to come along and say, "Ah, looks like a decent file." Okay, and move it into the public downloads area. Okay. For most sites that are doing this kind of stuff, this isn't so bad. And what some of them do is they just write a script to replace the admin, which goes through and says, "Does this file name look normal? Does it look like anything bad? If it doesn't, we'll move it over." However you do it, it's a decent thing to do. And what I do is I just give you some basic instructions on how to do this. Now, I talked about how we didn't want people to chmod stuff. We don't want to let them upload executable stuff, because if they can upload executable stuff, or they can make stuff that uploaded executable, then they can run it. Well, possibly. And if they can run it, that's where we get to run the backdoors like the one I showed you. So we can set a line called def umask, which, def umask sets a umask for all the files that get uploaded. And 177 just means nothing's executable, and anything I put up there isn't readable by anybody but me. To a pretty sane policy. Okay. Here's another vulnerability. This is also in your slides. And this vulnerability is denial of service. What you can do again is, you give FTP servers are really nice. Instead of just taking, you can give them a file name that you want to get, but they'll also do something called globbing for you, which is you say, "I don't want to type the whole name. The file is, AB. It begins with AB, so AB star," and it'll say, "Okay, yeah, I'll grab that for you." There have been a bunch of problems in this functionality. You can't really turn it off. But this is the next two vulnerabilities are basically in the globbing functionality, and somebody can crash your FTP server and potentially the whole machine, which is probably no fun, especially if you get called in the middle of the night because you've got a pager that goes off and they say you got to get in there and fix it. The targets on this one were WooFTP through 260. CoFTPD was also vulnerable through 121. That was on Red Hat 6.2, SUSE 7.3, OSX, the first version out, and also 10.0.1. It was on Solaris 8. A few of us probably have Solaris 8 in here. It was on HPUX 11.11. So there were a bunch of patches for this one. There are two decent things you can do. The first is the reason the attack works, to the extent you guys can see, is this ../..././*.//*. Okay. Again, that's a really, really weird pattern, and we'd like to just reject that pattern outright. We'd like to not let people screw around with our darn FTP server. So what you can do is just we'll do two things. The first is we're going to put a path filter, or the second is we're going to put a path filter in place that stops you from giving the FTP server weird input like that. Whenever you're giving it a file name, you won't be able to give it a file name that's too weird. Okay, and we'll look at what that includes. The other thing is really this is one of those areas where we're doing containment. If the FTP server is going to crash, we'd hope that maybe it doesn't crash the whole machine. Because if it crashed the whole machine, we might end up having to come on site. And if it just crashes the FTP server, we might be able to fix that remotely or something. So we'd like to. So what I do is I give you a couple things you can do. The first is in that FTP access file, you can put a nice line. Okay? Does everyone know what nice does on Unix systems? Who doesn't know what nice does? Who does know? Who's asleep? Okay, so everyone who didn't laugh is asleep now. Okay, so nice is nice just basically tells the program be nice. If you're trying to consume tons of resources, if we set a nice level high, nice levels go from -19 to +20. So 10's kinda high. If we set the nice level nice and high, the FTP server, if it ever gets really, really busy, won't interfere with freaking everything else running on the system, okay? It'll consume some of the system's resources, but not so much of it that it crashes the thing or doesn't let other vital stuff run. Again, it's kind of a boring line, but, you know, it keeps us from having to run in the middle of the night. There are a bunch of variables you can set in a file on Linux called etc/security/limits.conf, and what that lets you do is actually define for each user, and thus for each program on the system, how much memory it's allowed to eat up, how big the files it can create can be, how many processors it's allowed to use. So what I've done is I've highlighted a few items you might put, and there's a slide before that which is unfortunately very tough to read, says you can use the proc info command to try to come up with some sane numbers here. I didn't want to give you sane numbers because I don't know what they are for your site. That's a really tough one to do. You might just stick with the nice command for now. The big thing as far as trying anything like this, whenever you put resource limits on something on your system, the problem is that if it exceeds it and you're not around, then you have to come in and react to that. So you want to try this on a development system first and see if it works out. If you've got a development mirror of your FTP server, you want to try it there and see if it works out, or at least try it during the day. I had a boss who put a rule on me. He said I wasn't allowed to change anything big right before I went to lunch, right before I left at the end of the day, or on a Friday afternoon at all. Because invariably somebody would always do something on a Friday afternoon or whatever, and one of us would have to come in at 9 p.m. at night and fix some machine, which is definitely not the best way to spend your Friday night. At least I don't think so. I said there were two globbing vulnerabilities. The other one is in WooFTP 2.6.1, which is a lot more recent. Red Hat 7.2, SUSE 7.3, Mandrake 8.1, who knows what else. WooFTP is pretty widely used. We know that at the very least it's a DOS attack, because what this slide has, it has a single line. Once you connect to an FTP server as anonymous or as yourself, you type ls space tilde left curly bracket, the server crashes. Okay? It's thought that actually there's a remote root exploit here. It's not as easy as just crashing an FTP server. Unfortunately, this one's in the globbing code. You can't shut it off. Okay, this is one of those, you know, it's just there's not much we can do for it, okay? There's no real settings you can tweak. The best thing you can do is not to let the attacker log in first. Okay, so how do you do that? Well, I guess if you're not running anonymous mode, it doesn't get to log in, but maybe that's what you're all using FTP for. On the other hand, if you're using FTP only for normal users, their accounts are going to get stolen. I mean, anybody here from a big university or from a small university? Okay. How many accounts get stolen from your students via Telnet or FTP? Somebody setting up a sniffer somewhere at another university? How many per say year, or how many per month? Dozens per month, or dozens per year?
Dozens
per month. Okay. FTP stinks. It's clear text. Okay. If you're using names and passwords, that's what happens. It's really hard for universities to avoid it, because, you know, the best thing you can do to get off FTP is mostly educate your users as to why it's bad and get them onto something else. But universities, you're losing people every few years. It's really hard to educate your whole user base at once. So there's not much you can do to avoid it. On the other hand, you can contain this attack, and this is a cute trick. The way FTP works is it runs as root, and the reason it runs as root is so if you log in as anonymous, it drops down to user FTP. If you log in as J, then it drops down to user J. It puts its privileges down to J instead of root. And I'll show you one of the attacks we're going to talk about today. It's dropped down to FTP, and yet the people who wrote the attack got it to go back up to root. and break out of any troop prisons it's in, which is no fun. The best way we can actually block both of those. The way we do it is instead of running FTP as root, if we're just doing anonymous FTP, then all the time what happens is the FTP server is going to start out, going to log in, it's going to drop down to user FTP. Okay, and then the next person logs in. It's going to be, you know, when the next person logs in, they're going to log into something running as root. That's going to drop down to FTP. That's what it does all day. Accept a connection, drop down to FTP. Well, we can actually just start it as FTP. Okay, and the way we do that, The way we're going to do that is we're going to run FTP. FTP's being run on a BinetD or XInetD, and each of those actually sets in their configuration file what user FTP runs as. That's where we were. And so what we'll do, and what we'll do after we see one more attack where this would be a really useful defense to have, okay, is we'll set our FTP server to run as user FTP all the time. So someone can't, if the FTP server got started as user FTP, it can't get up to root. So there's you know, I mean, you can't get the, you, no matter what programming trick you've got, no matter what kind of weird vulnerability there is in root FTP, it's not going to go up because it can't go up. It doesn't have privilege on the system. The system won't let it do that. I want to show you one more vulnerability, so then we can talk about the defense. Anyone hear about the site exec vulnerability? This was kind of a biggie. Okay, it was a format string bug. Back when format strings first came out, this one was released. Right when the format string concept came out, there were just tons and tons of different packages that were all shown vulnerable, and a bunch of cool exploits came out. Some of them took a while to come out. This one came out pretty fast. This let you log in as anonymous and go all the way up to root really quick. And this is really weird. Like I said, the reason this is strange is because you're logging into this FTP server, and it's supposed to drop privilege to FTP as soon as you log in. And it does drop privilege to FTP. And what the exploit, I could show you the exploit code, it's in C, but basically the exploit code actually runs, you know, actually calls setuid and goes, you know, hey, make me root again, okay? And it goes up to root, and then since I told you anonymous logins are all blocked, they're all trueed, they're all jailed in this little directory, it breaks out of that too, because root can do that. It's a really cool exploit. And what you learn from that, there are a couple things. One of the exploits that does this is Tayso's exploit. It's called 7350root.c. Yeah, I've got a copy. I'll actually put all the exploit code that we've got for this up on my website. But the cool thing about this is that in its default mode, it doesn't actually, you know, when it has to connect as anonymous, and anonymous, you know, you're asked for an email address, okay, it doesn't actually give a valid email address. You know, it gives Mozilla @. So since there's nothing after that @, you know, the FTP server, what your FTP server says is, hey, that's a weird address. I'm not going to really give you any hell about it, but next time come with a real one. You know, what we really like the FTP server to do is say, that's not a real address, go away. And I'll show you how to do that. And if you do, that breaks this along with a number of the other scripts that ScriptKit has hit us with. The nice thing is when most of us are hit, okay, we're hit by script kiddies and worms. And I'm not sure which of those is smarter. They're both pretty dumb. And if you just change little things that they weren't expecting, they generally can't get anywhere. And so one of them is we'll make them give a real email address. And since neither of them will probably notice, their tool won't get them anywhere. The worms won't notice because they're not that smart. They're just scripts. The script kiddies won't notice because generally they're not watching that closely. And if they are, they say, what's RFC 822, which is what most of us say too. So the first thing you can do is actually just to break this exploit and a few others is you can that line that's in bold, password minus check RFC 822 enforce, all that does is say, give me a real email address so you don't get in. That one's, that's pretty simple, and it breaks a bunch of exploits. It's kind of crazy what simple stuff goes and breaks most of the stuff that we all, you know, that we're all running from. If I told you you could break Nimda with some weird, you know, with some little line, and you could break it before you'd even heard of it, it'd be kind of cool to know that you'd be impervious to the next Nimda that came out because, you know, you just had a weird configuration. This isn't weird, it's just, you know, it's just about as locked down as we can get. Okay. Site exec was useful against Woo FTP up through 2.6.0, which means Red Hat 6.2, SUSE 7.3, HPUX 11.11, I think Solaris 8. We can't turn off site exec. Okay, we can't turn off site exec, but we can use that, you know, it's just like the globbing code, but we can use a nice little trick. We can use a nice little trick to contain the damage. Okay, so instead of somebody getting remote root, they're going to get remote user FTP. The nice thing about user FTP is it's pretty boring. And unless you have a privilege escalation, unless you have some kind of privilege escalation attack, you're not going anywhere. And the nice thing is most of the privilege escalation attacks don't work from when you're stuck in a ultra root jail. Okay, the way the privilege escalation attacks work, the way user rooter worked, was there was some weird program called user helper on the systems. It's, you know, and that, when we create a chroot jail, it's a directory that doesn't have much in it. It has only what the FTP server needs. So it doesn't have these weird vulnerable, you know, user helper programs or whatever. So anyway, the deal is though that we can block this attack just by running the FTP server. If it's just an anonymous FTP server, which is what most of them seem to be, okay, we just tell it to run as FTP. Okay, both of these last two attacks, which we can't stop in any other way, we can contain. Okay, if you've got XINETD, all it's about is just changing. It's going to that file, going to the file that runs woo ftpd. It's /etc/xinetd.d woo ftpd. You change user from root to FTP. In inetd.conf, it's the same way. There's a single line that launches your FTP, and you just change that user from root to FTP. Okay, it's kind of nice. Okay. This is what we call containment. There's a lot of things that we can't find a way around, but we can stop them from doing much damage. We can stop, you know, and this is really great with the worms, because a worm gets onto your system, and generally the worm expects to come onto your system, be root, and start attacking other systems. Well, it's not going to be able to attack other systems if it's assuming it's root, and it can't actually run the code that it wanted to run, because that code only runs as root, and it's stuck in little user FTP. And maybe it's stuck in little user FTP in a little chroot prison with six files. Okay. The lesson behind this is we're not going to trust the application to actually drop privilege properly. Okay, because we know that sometimes they don't. We know that sometimes somebody comes up with a clever attack. So what we're going to do is just tell the application not to run as root in the first place. Or not really tell it, force it. Use inetd or xinetd to force that. Any questions? You all confused? Okay. You having a good time at all?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. I'm not going to ask if it's worth getting out of bed. A little worried there. It's 9 a.m. Okay, so here's another exploit. Woo FTP does this nice thing. It has this nice function that's actually on by default, which is this thing called message. And what it is that when you FTP in, you ever FTP up to a site and it says, you know, it pops out this thing that says, "Hi and welcome to kernel.org. We have lots of Linux here," you know. And then you switch directories and it's like, "You're in the wrong directory. The kernel's over there, dumb." Yeah, you know, you get that stuff? Okay, this is message files. There aren't too many sites that use it. Some of the high traffic sites use it. If you don't use it, then we should turn it off. Maybe some of the high traffic sites have changed their mind since this vulnerability came out. Either way, most of us don't need all this. Don't need the friendly messages. You know, we're just putting up an FTP site to trade a couple things. So the deal is with these. You know, the deal is with this problem is that basically, if an attacker can write their own message files. Okay, if there's any directory that basically the attacker can write to, okay, and doesn't have a message file, then he can bust root from there. Okay, so if he can write a message file, he can bust root. The question is, the issue is I know this slide is really hard to see, but basically The configuration file is just two little lines that talk about this message things. And we're not using them, we can just remove them. Okay? So it's really easy. It's really easy to dodge this one. And a lot of this is meant to be a... Now this sounds very reactive, because that's the way we're doing it, because it's more interesting reactive. But the idea is to do some of these steps in a proactive fashion. You're going to do it now, so we bring in your FTP server doesn't have any trouble with this message stuff right now. If they come up with another problem in 2 years, you know, if they come up with another problem, if another problem has been discovered now and we don't find out about it for 2 years, you didn't get hit by it because, you know, you had that configured off. Okay? So if we can remove those lines, we definitely do well. The other thing we can do is if we are using that functionality, we just make sure the permissions on the directories are really good. Okay? We make sure that the attacker can't write dot message files. The last thing is that path filter thing I talked about earlier. We're not going to let certain weird file names come up. We're not going to let them transfer in anything that begins with a dash or with a period. If you can't transfer in anything that begins with a period, then you can't transfer in a dot message file. Okay? This is again useful. The big reason that everyone was doing this for a while is to stop attackers from putting up hidden files and hidden directories on your FTP server, so their buddies could come along and pick them up. Okay. Again, this non, you know, I don't want to be a distribution site for wares, becomes a rather not get hacked either, by the way. So this one's pretty easy to avoid. The line that's really hard to read up here, but should be on your slides, is a path filter line, and it basically says, point it out on this screen, okay, or try, okay. Path filter, it talks about different classes of user. A little error message. There's a file name that's an error message for what you want to say when somebody tries to put up a file they shouldn't, like, you know, what the hell are you trying to do? Go away from here. Or, you know, you can't put that file here, or whatever. And the next thing is, the first thing is a pattern. I mean, the first thing is a list of all the characters. It's a pattern. It's a list of all the characters that are allowed. We'll allow files that have A through Z, 0 through 9, dots, underscores, and dashes. Okay? And then the last thing is, the last two things are a list of patterns that we won't allow. Anything that begins with a period, anything that begins with a dash. We should probably add underscore to that, anything that begins with an underscore, but we'll leave that alone for now. Okay, if we use this path filter, we dodge a bunch of attacks. We dodge, you know, I think we've dodged two so far out of the ones we've gone through. Okay. There's also, and the other thing we can do, which is what we've already talked about, is we can remove those message lines. So if there are message files, if somebody can write message files, they don't get anywhere with the attack because we've already turned that functionality off. Okay, so first we're not going to let them upload the message files. Even if they find a trick around our mighty path filter, they're still not going to be able to exploit it because the FTP server will say, yeah, whatever, it's just a file. It's not special to me. I'm not going to try to do anything with it. Okay. I've given you a command line, you know, a command line option that'll just pull those message lines right out. I'm going to show you when we end here a sample FTP access file you get after you apply all these suggestions. Okay. Really, what we want to do is try to do. I mean, we're always going to hope for avoidance, but do everything we can for containment. And that's kind of a lesson to be learned as we go through here. There are a few more best practices. One is logging. Logging, I like to think, is the second most boring thing in computer security, the first being patching. Unfortunately, being the most boring, they're also some of the most important. Darn it. So what we do is we just tell the FTP server to log a lot more, to log anything that looks like a security violation, and to log every command that somebody puts in. And, you know, if we read through the logs, we'll notice something weird, or maybe we can download something to read through our logs for us. Actually, if I saw correctly, somebody out there will sell you something that'll read through your logs for you. So we want to log a lot. This slide, which is darn hard to read, also says, y'all used FTP access. FTP access is this file you put all the users in. You don't want it to be allowed to use FTP. One of them is root, and the biggest reason for that is you don't want root giving their password away over FTP. It's just bad. But any system account counts, and we've got a new line called deny UID, deny GID, which says don't let anybody that doesn't look like a human user use this. On Linux, it's the numbers are through 499. If you're on Solaris, it's through 99. That's a range. Okay, 0 through 499, all the users that aren't normally human. Okay. I've talked about worms and auto-rooters a little bit. I'm a member of the HoneyNet project, but even if I wasn't, this statistic would definitely be extremely interesting to me. We put up systems, we just put up unpatched systems for the most part on the net and see what happens. And that seeing what happens turns out to be pretty interesting. But one of the things that happened was that we found that when we put a Red Hat 6.2 box on the internet, fastest time a human found it, you know, scanned it, found it, scanned it, and exploited it was 15 minutes from when we plugged it in. The scary thing, though, is that a worm did it in 92 seconds. Collection of shell scripts. You plug in the cable. Somebody, you know, somebody comes by and starts up a conversation. You look over. You're like, actually, I'm in the middle of something. Like, what the hell? You know, it's. This kind of stuff happens at colleges all the time in the dorms too. Whenever I give talks at colleges, I always hear about somebody who, plugged in the Red Hat system. They went off to dinner. They came back and they had email from the campus ethics office asking why they were hacking other people. And they're like, I didn't hack anybody. It turned out somebody had taken over their box that quickly and started using it to attack others. Okay. The nice things about a lot of these worms is, like I said before with the script kiddie comment, they're really dumb. Okay? It's really great how extremely dumb the worms are. Okay? The ramen worm was a worm that had an FTP exploit. As far as I can tell, actually, its FTP exploit didn't work because it was using one of the ones that was intentionally broken by the author, so script kiddies and other things as dumb as script kiddies couldn't use them. One of the nice things is that the way the ramen worm works is it goes and looks at your FTP header. It opens up a connection, looks at your FTP header. If you have the right date, it says, that build date sounds like one I can take care of, and it attacks you. And if you advertise anything else on that line, it doesn't attack you even if you're vulnerable. Okay? A lot of script kiddies operate in exactly the same way. There's also an auto-router out there called Auto-Woo. Okay, this came out in April of this year. It will basically, the way you do it is you start it up, you feed it a class B address space. Okay, you feed it a class B address space. How many addresses is that? Like 65,000. You just give it a number. It goes and scans 65,000 addresses across the internet, looking for vulnerable FTP systems, FTP servers, and whenever it finds them, it roots them and gives you a, you know, and lets you know, hey, this is yours. Have fun. So we've gotten systems compromised, and someone sets up one of these auto routers after they compromise us, and then they're hoping to go after. If we didn't have strict controls in place, they'd probably nail 100 or 200 more people in the next few hours. The auto router is a really nice, powerful tool. But the nice thing is, this thing, again, like the ramen worm, actually goes and looks at headers and says, you say you're running pro FTPD. You're not vulnerable to me. I'm going to go and look at somebody else. And you're actually running Woo, but you're just kind of like hiding that. There's a nice little trick. Either you can change. You can write greeting terse. You can add one line that says greeting terse, and what it'll just say, and it's hard to read, what it says is FTP server ready. Doesn't say what it is, doesn't say what date it was built, doesn't say what version it was, and best of all, it doesn't get caught by worms. However, a script kiddie might see that and say, okay, well, I'll try my attack anyway. So what's nice is actually we can use, instead of greeting terse, you can say greeting text, and you can put anything you want. You can put go away, but my favorite is to put on a Woo FTP server, pro FTPD version 1.3.0, pre-10, which says, these aren't the droids you're looking for, or whatever. It's basically just saying, I'm a pro FTP server. I mean, you don't want me. Go for somebody else, And again, it blocks worms and it deters a good number of script kiddies too, which is really nice. I've also put a stat. You have to use this stat thing. You have to also, if you change the header, once somebody logs in, they can also ask what kind of FTP server it is. So you have to do the same thing with a stat line because they can type stat. Okay. So this is where I show you what kind of file we've been building with all these suggestions. Okay. We've got all those. We've got compress, no, tar, no, chmod, no, all of these things that say all the things you're not allowed to do. Okay. We've got an upload area that we created that you can't pull files back down from, deterring a good number of exploits. That password check line says you've got to give a real email address. Nice thing about giving a real email address is the worms, the scripts, don't tend to do it. So they fail because they couldn't even finish connecting to the FTP server. Okay? We've got a path filter. It doesn't let you put in any weird file names. Okay? And that blocks a whole bunch of stuff. We're logging everything out the yin-yang, and hopefully we're going to catch stuff when it happens fairly close to when it happens. We've set in some of this deny, you know, we're not going to let any non-human user use this thing. We've set up the greeting text to give a fake banner to fake people out, which is a little fun one. That UMask thing means that if people upload files, they can't upload anything executable, they can't upload anything that other people could pull down. And that nice line stops anybody who is able to successfully DOS the FTP server from also DOSing the whole freaking box. So this is all pretty darn useful. I added in a section on Chroot just for it's just for the slides that you guys might want to take a look at. There's basically, you can Chroot all the users with something called guest mode. It's really a pain in the butt because what you do is you put all their home directories in somewhere like home FTP, and now what happens is they're Chrooted into home FTP, and they're able, whenever they're FTP up. And this is really useful because, again, remember how at the beginning of this I used an exploit? It gave me shell access as user J, and then I used user router, which found another program elsewhere on the box that was vulnerable and exploited that to get root. Well, if J got chrooted, then he couldn't find anything else on the box. And if he can't find anything else in the box that's vulnerable, he can't escalate privilege up to root. And, you know, the poor sap's just got user J, which is not a very interesting user. I've basically given you instructions on how to do guest access, and it's just, you know, you just set up the directives, and there's some chmodding involved, and there's a how-to for exactly how to do this on WooFTP's site. There's also a couple ways to cheat, and one of them is just copy all the, if you already have an anonymous upload area, you can take the chrooted environment from there and copy it over. This is covered in the how-to. Okay. I have one more thing that I added in last night. I was one of the many Black Hat parties, and somebody said, actually, one of the things that I do is I make all my FTP servers run as virtual servers. And what he means by virtual servers is that instead of his FTP servers aren't accessible, they're not accessible by IP address. Because if you just try to connect to the FTP port on that IP address, but you're not using the right name, then you don't get anywhere. Okay, you don't get the real FTP server. You get the real FTP server, not the virtual one that's, you know, actually what's doing everything. So for the most part, all the things that go and scan large portions of the internet, looking for vulnerable systems, find they can't really interact with much of the system because they don't know the name of the virtual area. Does this make sense? It's kind of an odd concept. I hadn't thought of it. This is a really good idea, and I said, you know, I'll put that in the class the next time I do it. I'll put that in the talk the next time I do it. I was thinking last night, God, that's a really good idea. You could dodge a lot of the worms, a lot of the automated, you know, a lot of the automated attack tools just by doing this. And so what I've done is I've given you instructions. The other cool thing is I was busting on FTP because it's always giving away people's passwords. The nice thing is, when you do a virtual server, you can have normal users that with their own passwords, but they can have a second password that just works for the FTP server. If they have a second password that works for the FTP server, yeah, they're going to lose the, you know, someone's going to pilfer their password, but that someone will only be able to use the FTP server. They won't be able to use the person's normal account for Telnet or SSH or whatever because they have a different password over there. Yes, this requires educating the users and telling them not to use the same password, but this was the whole point, but it definitely can be done. And I've got slides on that. The last thing I generally get asked is, and we've got five more slides, I promise, I know we're running low on time. The last thing I get asked is, well, if WooFTP is so bad, why don't you just go and use something else? When you talk about ProFTP, well, ProFTP's had a bunch of vulnerabilities. Since people say, well, OpenBSD, yeah, Theo rocks. And yes, Theo does rock, and OpenBSD does rock. And if you have a firewall, use OpenBSD for your firewall. Go, wah, roo. But OpenBSD's FTP daemon has also had a remote root grab. It wasn't well publicized, it wasn't too publicized because it wasn't in the default install. The default install of FTP, of OpenBSD, turns that off. But if you turn it back on, you got hit. There is one good alternative, and that's VSFTPD. Okay, and this thing has not had a security issue yet. It's really well designed, and it's just, you know, it was written with security in mind. It's got fewer features. You want to try it out on the development system for like a month before you move your FTP server over to it to make sure that you're not losing any functionality that you need. But it's pretty sweet. By the way, that TAR attack wouldn't have worked because it doesn't let you use TAR. It doesn't even have to use LS or anything like that. So it's pretty nice. It also, as is becoming a common thing with programs like PostFix, it actually uses multiple programs, and some of those have lots of privilege, and some of those interact with users, and they're not the same ones. So it's just a lot safer. Okay, and you can pull it down from beasts.org, from bsdd.beasts.org. And if anyone knows the story behind that domain name, I really do want to know. Okay. Lastly, I busted on FTP, as I always do. Maybe we could use HTTP to give away files to everybody, and if we could get everyone on SSH and SFTP, that would really be nice, because they're full replacements for FTP, and at this point, I think they're even mostly free. At this point, go in peace. You're done. If you can, please do go and change your FTP servers. If you call me up in a month and tell me you just got rooted through your FTP server because you get around to doing this stuff, I promise I won't laugh at you. Somebody else might. Okay?